Chapter 15. Katya the maid came in, much alarmed.
"Goodness knows what's the matter, Nastasya Philipovna. A dozen men have broken in, and they are all drunk. They asked to be shown in. They say it's Rogozhin and that you know."
"That's right, Katya. Show them all in at once."
"You don't mean all of them, Nastasya Philipovna? They're in a disgraceful state. Shocking."
"Let them all in, Katya. Every one of them. Don't be afraid, or they'll come in without your showing. What an uproar they are making, just as they did this afternoon. Perhaps you are offended, friends," she turned to her guests, "at my receiving such company in your presence. I'm very sorry, and beg your pardon, but I can't help it. And I am very, very anxious that you should all consent to be my witnesses at this final scene, though, of course, you must please yourselves."
The guests were still astonished, looking at one another and whispering, but it was perfectly clear that all this had been calculated and arranged beforehand, and that although Nastasya Philipovna had certainly gone out of her senses, she could not be turned from her intention now. Everyone was in agonies of curiosity. Besides, there was no one present likely to be alarmed. There were only two ladies in the party. Darya Alexeyevna, a sprightly lady who had seen the seamy side of life and could not be easily put out of countenance, and the handsome but silent stranger. But the silent stranger could hardly have understood what was passing. She was a German who had not long been in Russia and knew not a word of Russian, and she seemed to be as stupid as she was handsome. She was a novelty, and it had become a fashion to invite her to certain parties, sumptuously attired, with her hair dressed as though for a show, and to seat her in the drawing-room as a charming decoration, just as people sometimes borrow from their friends for a special occasion a picture, a statue, a vase, or a fire-screen. As for the men, Titsin, for instance, was a friend of Rogozhin's. Ferdyshenko was in his element. Gania could not recover himself, yet he had a vague but irresistible impulse to stay out his ignominy to the end. The old teacher, who had only a dim notion of what was going forward, was almost in tears, and literally trembling with fear, noticing an exceptional agitation around him, and in Nastasya Philipovna, whom he adored as though she had been his grandchild. But he would sooner have died than have deserted her at such a moment. As for Totski, he would, of course, not have cared to compromise himself by such adventures, but he was too much interested in the matter, though it was taking such a crazy turn. Moreover, Nastasya Philipovna had dropped two or three words for his benefit, which made him feel he could not go home till the matter was cleared up. He resolved to remain to the end, and to keep perfectly silent, confining himself to observation, which indeed was the only course consistent with dignity. General Epanchin, who had only just been offended by the unceremonious and ridiculous return of his present, might, of course, feel still more insulted by these strange eccentricities, or perhaps by the entrance of Rogozhin. A man in his position had indeed demeaned himself too far by sitting down by the side of Titsin and Ferdyshenko, for however much passion might influence him, it might well at last have been overcome by a sense of obligation, by a feeling of duty, of his rank and importance and self-respect generally, so that Rogozhin and his companions were in any case inadmissible in the presence of his excellency.
"Ah, General," Nastasya Philipovna interrupted him at once, as soon as he made his protest.
"I had forgotten, but believe me, I had thought of you before. If it's such an offence to you, I won't insist on keeping you, though I am very anxious to have you particularly beside me at this moment. In any case, I thank you very much for your friendship and flattering notice. But if you are afraid..."
"Allow me, Nastasya Philipovna," cried the general, in a rush of chivalrous feeling. "To whom are you saying this? Only from devotion to you, I will remain at your side now. And if there is any danger... Besides, I must confess I am extremely interested. I only meant to say that they will spoil your carpets and perhaps break something, and you ought not to see them at all, to my thinking, Nastasya Philipovna."
"Rogozhin himself," Ferdyshenko announced.
"What do you think, Afanasy Ivanovitch?" the general managed to whisper to him in haste. "Hasn't she taken leave of her senses? I mean, not allegorically, but in the literal medical sense, eh?"
"I have told you that she's always been disposed that way," Totski whispered slyly.
"And she is in a fever, too."
Rogozhin was accompanied by almost the same followers as in the afternoon. There were only two additions to the company. One, a worthless old man, once the editor of a disreputable libelous paper, of whom the story went that for drink he had once pawned his false teeth, and a retired sub-lieutenant, the rival by trade and calling of the gentleman with the fists. He was utterly unknown to all Rogojin's party, but had been picked up in the street on the sunny side of the Nevsky Prospect, where he used to stop the passer-by, begging insistence in the language of Malinsky, slyly alleging that he used to give away as much as 15 rubles at once in his time. The two rivals at once took up a hostile attitude to one another. The gentleman with the fists considered himself affronted by this addition to the party. Being silent by nature, he merely growled at times like a bear, and with profound contempt looked at the tricks by which his rival, who turned out to be a man of the world and a diplomatist, tried to ingratiate himself and win favour. The sub-lieutenant promised, to judge by appearances, more skill and dexterity at work than strength, and he was shorter than the fisted gentleman. Delicately, and without entering into open competition, though he boasted shockingly, he hinted several times at the superiority of English boxing. He seemed, in fact, a thoroughgoing champion of Western culture. The fisted gentleman only smiled contemptuously and huffily, not deigning to contradict his rival openly, though at times he showed him silently, as though by chance, or rather moved into the foreground, a thoroughly national argument, a huge, sinewy, gnarled fist covered with a sort of reddish down. It was made perfectly clear to everyone that, if this truly national argument were accurately brought to bear on any subject, it would reduce it to pulp. Thanks to the efforts of Rogojin, who had all day long been looking forward to his visit to Nastasya Philipovna, none of the party was completely drunk. He himself was by now nearly sober, but almost stupefied with the number of sensations he had passed through in that chaotic day that was unlike anything he'd experienced in his life before. One thing only had remained constantly in his mind and his heart at every minute, every instant. For the sake of that one thing, he had spent the whole time between 5 o'clock in the afternoon and 11 o'clock at night in continual misery and anxiety, worrying with kinders and biskups, Jews and moneylenders, who were driven almost distracted too, rushing about like mad on his errands. They had, anyway, succeeded in raising the 100,000 rubles, of which Nastasya Philipovna had mockingly dropped a passing and quite vague hint. But the money had been lent at a rate of interest, of which even Biskup himself did not venture to speak to Kinder above a bashful whisper. As in the afternoon, Rogojin stepped forward first. The rest followed him, somewhat uneasy, though fully conscious of their advantages. What they were most frightened of, goodness knows why, was Nastasya Philipovna. Some of them almost expected that they would all be promptly kicked downstairs, and among these was the dandy and lady-killer Zolyovshev. But others, and the fisted gentleman was conspicuous among them, cherished at heart profound though unspoken contempt and even hatred for Nastasya Philipovna, and had come to her house as though to take it by storm. But the magnificence of the first two rooms, the articles they had never seen or heard of before, the choice furniture and pictures, and the life-size statue of Venus, roused in them an overwhelming sentiment of respect and almost of fear. This did not, however, prevent them all from gradually crowding with insolent curiosity into the drawing-room after Rogojin. But when the fisted gentleman, his rival, and some of the others noticed general apprehension among the guests, they were for the first moment so crestfallen that they positively beat a retreat to the other room. Lebedev, however, was among the more fearless and resolute, and he stepped forward, almost beside Rogojin, having grasped the true significance of a fortune of 1,400,000, 100,000 of it in hard cash. It must be observed, however, that all of them, even the knowing Lebedev, were a little uncertain of the precise limits of their powers, and did not know whether they were really able to do just as they liked or not. Lebedev was ready to swear at certain moments that they were, but at other moments he felt uneasily impelled to remind himself of several pre-eminently cheering and reassuring articles of the legal code. On Rogojin himself, Nastasya Philipovna made a very different impression from that produced on his companions. As soon as the curtain over the door was raised and he saw her, everything else ceased to exist for him, as it had that morning, and even more completely than it had that morning. He turned pale, and for an instant stopped short. It might be conjectured that his heart was beating violently. He gazed for some seconds, timidly and desperately, at Nastasya Philipovna, without taking his eyes off her. Suddenly, as though lost to all reason, almost staggering as he moved, he went up to the table. On the way, he stumbled against Titsin's chair and trod with his huge dirty boots on the lace trimming of the dumb German beauty's magnificent light blue dress. He did not apologize, and indeed, he did not notice it. He laid on the table a strange object, which he was holding before him in both hands when he entered the drawing-room. It was a thick roll of paper, 6 inches thick and 8 inches long, stoutly and tightly wrapped up in a copy of the Financial News, tied round and round and twice across with string, as loaves of sugar are tied up. Then he stood still without uttering a word, and let his hands fall, as though awaiting his sentence. He was dressed exactly as before, except for a new bright red and green silk scarf round his neck, a huge diamond pin in the form of a beetle stuck in it, and a massive diamond ring on a finger of his grubby right hand. Lebedev stopped short 3 paces from the table. The others, as I have said, were gradually making their way into the drawing-room. Katya and Pasha, Nastasya Philipovna's maids, had run up too to look under the lifted curtain in great amazement and alarm.
"What's this?"
asked Nastasya Philipovna, scanning Rogozhin intently and curiously and glancing towards the object.
"100,000," answered Rogozhin almost in a whisper.
"Ah, so he's kept his word. What a man. Sit down, please, here on this chair. I shall have something to say to you later. Who is with you? All the same party? Well, let them come in and sit down. They can sit on that sofa and this other sofa here. Here are 2 armchairs. What's the matter with them? Don't they want to?"
Some of them were, in fact, completely overcome with confusion. They beat a retreat and settled down to wait in the other room. But others remained and sat down as they were invited, only rather further from the table, and for the most part in out-of-the-way corners. Some of them still wished to efface themselves, but others regained their effrontery with incredible rapidity, as time went on. Rogozhin, too, sat down on the chair assigned him, but he did not sit there long. He stood up and did not sit down again. By degrees he began to scrutinize and distinguish the visitors. Seeing Gania, he smiled malignantly and whispered to himself, "Hello." He gazed at the general and Totsky without shyness or special interest. But when he noticed Mushkin beside Nastasya Philipovna, he was extremely amazed, and could not take his eyes off him for a long time. He seemed at a loss to explain his presence. It may well have been that he was at moments in actual delirium. Besides the violent emotions he had gone through that day, he had spent all the previous night in the train, and had been almost 48 hours without sleep.
"This, friends, is 100,000 rubles,
said Nastasya Philipovna, addressing the company with a sort of feverish, impatient defiance.
"In this dirty bundle. This afternoon he shouted like a madman that he would bring me 100,000 this evening, and I've been expecting him all the time. He was bidding for me. He began at 18, then he suddenly passed at 1 pound to 40, and then this 100 here. He's kept his word. Phew, how pale he is. It all happened at Ganya's this afternoon. I went to pay his mother a visit in my future home, and there his sister shouted in my face, 'Won't they turn this shameless creature out?' And she spat in her brother Ganya's face. She is a girl of character."
"Nastasya Philipovna," General Epanchin articulated reproachfully. He was beginning to understand the situation in his own way.
"What's the matter, General? Is it improper? Let's give up humbugging. What if I used to sit in the box at the French Theatre like an inaccessible paragon of virtue? What if I did run like a wild thing from all who have been pursuing me for the last 5 years, and wore the airs of proud innocence? It was all because I was a silly fool. Here, in your presence, he has come in and put 100,000 on the table after my 5 years of innocence, and no doubt they troikas outside waiting for me. He prices me at 100,000. Ganya, I see you are still angry with me. Could you really have meant to make me one of your family? Me? Rogozhin's woman? What did the prince say just now?
I didn't say you were Rogozhin's. You don't belong to Rogozhin, Mishkin articulated in a shaking voice.
Nastasya Philipovna, give over, my dear. Give over, darling,
Darya Alexeyevna said suddenly, unable to restrain herself.
If they make you so miserable, why think about them? And can you really mean to go off with a fellow like that, even for 100,000? It's true, it's 100,000, and that's something. You take the 100,000 and send him about his business. That's the way to treat them. Ugh, if I were in your place, I'd send them all, upon my word.
Darya Alexeyevna was moved to positive anger. She was a very good-natured and impressionable woman.
Don't be angry, Darya Alexeyevna,
Nastasya Philipovna laughed to her.
I did not speak to him in anger. Did I reproach him? I simply can't understand what folly possessed me to want to enter an honourable family. I've seen his mother. I kissed her hand. And the pranks I played at your flat this afternoon, Ganya, were on purpose to see for the last time how far you could go. You surprised me, really. I expected a good deal, but not that. Would you actually have married me, knowing that he was giving me such pearls, almost on the eve of your wedding, and I was accepting them? And Rogozhin? Why, in your home, in the presence of your mother and sister, he was bidding for me. And even after that you came here to make a match of it and nearly brought your sister. Can Rogozhin have been right when he said that you'd crawl on all fours to the other end of Petersburg for 3 rubles?
Yes, he would too, Rogozhin brought out suddenly, speaking quietly but with an air of profound conviction.
It would be a different matter if you were starving, but I am told you get a good salary. And apart from the disgrace and everything else, to think of bringing a wife you hate into your house, for you do hate me, I know that. Yes, now I do believe that such a man would murder anyone for money. Everyone is possessed with such a greed nowadays. They are all so overwhelmed by the idea of money that they seem to have gone mad. The very children take to money lending. A man winds silk round his razor, makes it firm, comes from behind and cuts his friend's throat like a sheep's, as I read lately. Well, you are a shameless fellow. I am a shameless woman, but you are worse. I say nothing about the bouquet holder.
Is this you? Is this you, Nastasya Philipovna?
General Epanchin clasped his hands in genuine distress.
You so refined with such delicate ideas, and now what language, what expressions?
I am tipsy now, General,
Nastasya Philipovna laughed suddenly.
I want to have my fling. This is my day. My holiday. My red-letter day. I've been waiting for it a long time. Darya Alexeyevna, do you see this bouquet holder? This Monsieur aux Camélias? There he sits, laughing at us.
I am not laughing, Nastasya Philipovna. I am only listening with the greatest attention, Totski protested with dignity.
Why have I been tormenting him for the last 5 years, and not letting him go? Was he worth it? He is just what he ought to be. Most likely he reckons I have treated him badly, too. He gave me education. He kept me like a countess, and the money. The money wasted on me. He looked me out a respectable husband in the country in those days. And now Ganya here. And, would you believe it, I have not lived with him for the last 5 years, and yet have taken his money and thought I had a right to. I have been so completely lost to all sense. You say take the 100,000 and get rid of him, if it's horrid. And it really is horrid. I might have been married long ago, and not to Ganya either. But that would have been just as horrid too. And why have I wasted 5 years in my anger? And would you believe it, 4 years ago I thought at times whether I hadn't better marry my Afanasy Ivanovitch outright. I thought of it out of spite. I had all sorts of ideas in my head at that time. And you know, I could have brought him to it. He used to urge it himself, though you mayn't believe it. He was lying, it's true, but he is easily tempted. He can't restrain himself. But afterwards, thank God, I thought he wasn't worth such anger. and I suddenly felt so disgusted with him then that if he had besought me, I wouldn't have married him. And for the last 5 years, I've been keeping up this farce. No, I'd better be in my proper place. In the streets. I must either have a spree with Rogojin, or go out as a washerwoman tomorrow, for I've nothing of my own. If I go away, I shall give up everything of his. I shall leave every rag behind. And who'll take one with nothing? Ask Ganya there if he'll have me. Why, even Ferdoshenko wouldn't.
Perhaps Ferdoshenko wouldn't, Nastasya Philipovna. I'm a candid person, interposed Ferdoshenko. But the prince would take you. You sit here and complain, but you should look at the prince. I've been watching him a long time.
Nastasya Philipovna turned with curiosity to Mushkin.
Is that true?
She asked.
It's true,
whispered Mushkin.
Will you take me as I am with nothing?
I will, Nastasya Philipovna.
Here's a new development, muttered the general. I might have expected it.
Mushkin looked with a stern, mournful, and penetrating gaze into the face of Nastasya Philipovna, who was still scanning him.
"Here's a find," she said suddenly, turning again to Darya Alexeyevna. "And simply from goodness of heart, too. I know him. I have found a benefactor. But maybe it's true what they say about him, that he is not quite... What are you going to live on if you are so in love that you, a prince, are ready to marry Rogozhin's woman?"
"I'm going to marry an honest woman, Nastasya Philipovna."
"Not Rogozhin's woman," said Mushkin.
"Do you mean that I am an honest woman?"
"Yes."
"Oh, all those notions come out of novels. Those are old-fashioned fancies, Prince darling. Nowadays the world has grown wiser. And how can you get married? You want a nurse to look after you."
Mushkin got up and in a shaking, timid voice, but with an air of intense conviction, pronounced,
"I know nothing about it, Nastasya Philipovna. I have seen nothing of life. You are right there. But I consider that you will be doing me an honour. Not I, you. I am nothing. And you have suffered and have come pure out of that hell. And that is a great deal. Why, then, are you ashamed and ready to go off with Rogozhin? It's fever. You have given back 70,000 to Mr. Totsky, and you say that you will give up everything. Everything here. No one here would do that. I... Nastasya Philipovna, I love you. I would die for you, Nastasya Philipovna. I won't let anyone say a word about you. If we are poor, I'll work, Nastasya Philipovna."
At the last word, a snigger was heard from Ferdoshenko and Lebedev, and even the general gave a sort of snort of great dissatisfaction. Titsin and Totsky could not help smiling, but controlled themselves. The others simply gaped with astonishment.
"But perhaps we shan't be poor, but very rich, Nastasya Philipovna,"
Mushkin went on in the same timid voice.
"I don't know for certain, and I'm sorry that I haven't been able all day to find out about it, but I had a letter from Moscow while I was in Switzerland, from a certain Mr. Salazkin, and he informed me that I may receive a very large inheritance. Here is the letter."
Mushkin did in fact produce a letter from his pocket.
"Oh, isn't he raving?" muttered the general. "Well, this is a perfect madhouse."
For an instant there was silence. "I believe you said, Prince, that the letter was from Salazkin?" asked Titsin. "He's a man very well known in his own circle. He's a very distinguished lawyer, and if it is really he who sends you the news, you may put complete trust in it. Fortunately, I know his handwriting, for I had business with him lately. If you would let me have a look at it, I might tell you." With a shaking hand, Mushkin held out the letter without a word.
"What now? What now?" the general cried, looking at everybody like one possessed. "Can it really be an inheritance?"
Everyone fixed their eyes on Titsin as he read the letter. The general curiosity had received a new and violent stimulus. Ferdoshenko could not keep still. Rogozhin looked on with amazement and great anxiety, turning his eyes from Mushkin to Titsin. Darya Alexeyevna seemed on tenterhooks of expectation. Even Lebedev could not help coming out of his corner and, bending himself into a triangle, peeped at the letter over Titsin's shoulder, with the air of a man expecting a blow for doing so.